Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, is Tell Del Tuesday. And as always, we have interesting guests on to share their experiences in real estate investing so that it may be will let you see some insight into whether or not it fits something in your lifestyle or not. With us today is Angela Saig out of Houston, Texas, who has six single-family houses and two passive deals. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Hi, Del. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
I'm glad you could make it. Let's talk about way back when you first started thinking about adding real estate investing to your lifestyle. I know in your bio, you said you like diversity.
Yes. I started thinking about real estate ages ago because I had a friend who did a lot of rental houses, but I couldn't quite figure out how to do it financially without saving for like 10 years per house. And when COVID started, some things changed just where I was thinking where I would go when I'm old and decrepit. And I thought maybe I need to do some other things and figure it out. And I was Googling and found you. And that's how I started in 2021.
And what was your first experience? Did you go to one of the free workshops? Did you go to the 2-day directly? How did you get, what was your first taste?
I started with the 1-hour free webinar. And then I helped do some training classes, like the admin for some training classes where I work. And I was doing always this calculation of how much per hour was the training class, and I thought it was a good buy. So even if you didn't go to the next step, you at least were learning something. And I thought, well, this is affordable for the number of hours and number of courses available. And so then I went to the 2-day, signed up as a the first level where you could get access to the single family classes online. And I thought, well, there's so much. Of course, this is, you know, cost per hour of classes and training was really great. So I figured even if I don't go to the next step, maybe my questions will be answered of how does it work? And so then I was hooked and I became a challenge member so I could get the help of mentors. And then I sort of piddled about doing my training and went to a case study where there was a person, he was a police officer and he had a really moving story and he had talked about when he joined and within a month he had a house. And I thought, I'm being so lazy, I need to get out there. And so that really motivated me. And I was out there and probably had my house within a couple months. I wasn't as fast as he was, but he did inspire me. And that's where it happened.
That's great. Love inspiration and not motivation. When you see somebody else do it, that's kind of like, okay, that's a kick in the booty. Let's take you back, if you could, to the 2-day class. Because you've came in so raw, didn't have a lot of information about real estate beforehand, just a lot of desire to have information. What aha moments, if you can remember them, clicked for you in that 2-day?
The biggest aha moment was information about a hard money loan. I had never heard the term before and didn't know about it. And that, to me, is the secret of being able to finance the houses quicker than having to save 10 years, six to 10 years for your 20% down and enough money to do rehab if needed. And so that really opened the door to being able to look at houses that had maybe more need for rehab and being able to finance it without having to save and do it faster. So where I was thinking I would need 10 years for one house, in the 4 years, I guess 21 through 2024 is when I was been buying houses, and I have 5.5 houses. I think they rounded up. I don't have six. I have 5.5. I think that helped.
Well, I'm going to call it six rentals there. So now We can argue over that. You have six different rental units
behind one house, so that's why I call it a half.
I understand. So let's talk about when you came out of the two-day, what did you want to do right away? Because I asked that question because you have both single-family and passive deals.
Single-family. I showed you in the videos, right, because you have to have the instruction and the education to move forward to know what you're going to do. And then really I think I took a pause because summers, and then in the fall I started going on the road trips, and that really lit my fire, I think, besides the case study that was so inspirational, the going on the road trips and seeing the houses and then seeing other people who are actively buying houses. And at the time they had a thing where you put your name in a hat, and the first road trip I couldn't put my name in the hat. I was too frightened. And the next thing that the next month, Jennifer McCormick, one of the realtors, was like, "How about this house?" And I said, "I'm in." I even came and I said, "I'm definitely putting my name in. I'm getting a house this trip." I was very determined at that point. So that was the road.
So that's interesting. Really, for folks out there that don't understand what she's talking about, because this is not a common thing, is that one of the fun things that we do is we go out on road trips. We find properties we know make sense. We do all the numbers and math beforehand. And then we go out and show people. Look, this is what it looks like. It's ugly. It's terrible. It's torn up. No, you don't like anything about it. But if you'd like to buy this one, it works this way, and show them the numbers. And if people are interested, put their name in the hat, and then we draw out a name, and whoever draws it out gets first shot at taking the house. So that's always a fun thing to do. But I can understand why it'd be scary if you'd never done one. Now you're taking one. So the first one you got from
road trip. We even were standing in a house that had no floor. They had pulled out the floor. It was one that was currently in rehab. And so all of us were standing in the house looking at it and just stepping over it. It was a pier and beam house. So you're just walking over the beams. And I think if I had seen that right at the beginning, I probably would have been very frightened. But I was a couple houses in. And then you're just like, oh, okay. And you start to look at these houses that are in terrible shape going, oh, I can see it. Yeah, this is going to be a great house. So it really does change your viewpoint and ability to get to concept.
Take us through the struggle, and I don't know if struggle is the right word for it. It's the experience of doing your first deal. And because, you know, there's 10, 20, 30 different things that you have to learn to do, and you do them. It's funny, like you do it, then you know it, right? But then you have to do another one, then you know that, and then so on and so forth. Take us through that first process, the first house.
Oh, the first house. I remember when I went to go drive to go see it the first time, it had to be one of the worst rainstorms I've driven through. And I was thinking, is God trying to keep me from getting to this house? But I think it just worked out. The contractors I used were really great. I had help from the realtor and the vendor list, trying to find appropriate vendors, inspections and stuff. And one thing I did not do, and I always tell anyone I meet, I did not get the sewer scope, and I bought the house that was ready to move in at the end of November of 2021, and on Christmas Day, they called me and said, there's a problem with the sewer, and I thought, no way. I don't know what happened to that sewer, but it had pretty much disintegrated, which was more disgusting than you want on a radio program, but I had to get it fixed, of course, right, and it's really the only big thing that happened, and it's because I skipped that step that they do mention in the 2 days. So if you guys do tell us, do it. But now I am a devotee of sewer scooping, because I could then have worked it into the rehab. Possibly I did have another house that had a sewer line issue, and I was able to get like a $5,000 discount off the purchase price because we had started it early.
Okay, now you've got the rehab done. Let's talk about, you purchased it, you renovated it, you did a hard money loan, and then you transferred, I assume, over to a regular loan. By the time that's you're all done, how much did you come out of pocket on the deal, total, and the whole deal? And did you have any captured equity with the deal?
Well, I did. I actually had come out of pocket. It was, in the end, 37. There was some things that had to be done that weren't known at the beginning. Which also were life lessons. So now things like, are there two layers of shingles on the house? Because it costs extra to remove that extra layer. But I think that I got about 35 equity capture. And, you know, as every month as you're paying the mortgage, right, you're getting another $250 towards that. So it's been a few years now. So I think I have an extra, I want to say $9,000 in equity capture over the years of paying the mortgage, right? Yeah, so it's actually cash flowing pretty well, about $350 a month.
Okay, that's pretty good. So we've got $35,000 equity capture on a $37,000 out-of-pocket. That sounds like about a 98% return. That's very good. Of course, you've got your principal reduction that you're talking about, and that's adding up now. Another $9,000 you said added up already.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got your cash flow, $350 per month times 12. That gives us $4,200 a year divided by $37,000 out-of-pocket. And that is an 11% cash-on-cash return. All very good. All very good stuff. All right, so that's great. Now, let's talk about your first time leasing. Everything's brand new when you do it the first time. Let's talk about how long that took to lease the property, how you did it, and did you run into anything that you didn't know yet on that one?
Yeah, I'm excited that you asked this question because this house is very unusual. The contractor started their first day of being at the house to work on removing the roof, right, the shingles. And some people walked up and said, are you going to be renting out this house? And he said, yes, I can give you know them my information. And actually got their information, so I called them. And they were renting down the street, and the person who owned the house wanted to sell it, and they were going to have to move out. And the timing worked out that they actually qualified and became my renters, and they're still there and actually are interested in probably buying the house if possible, if they're able to qualify for a loan. So, I didn't have to do anything really. It was the best.
Well, that is way too easy. I don't know if we should even tell that story, but you know what?
It happens. Day one.
It does happen. All right. Well, that's great. That's a good first house story. You had to come away from that feeling pretty good about yourself, huh?
Yeah, I did. It was almost too easy, but it was nice to see that it worked. I mean, nothing had been changed on the house when they looked at it. I actually let them come through, look at it, told them what I would be doing to it for the rehab. They liked the idea, and we're ready to decide on it to be my renters. So that was really a great experience.
All right. So after you came through this experience, how long did it take to get up the guts to do the next one?
I did two houses the next year, and I think I over-challenged myself because they were at the same time. I actually think I became sort of a house tramp. Just the fact that anytime someone said, hey, we're going to go look at this house, I'm like, I'm coming. I didn't care if I was, it was like I was first on the list or I was maybe some people down on the list in order of response, right? Because I figured, well, I could still be learning. And even, you know, they would have a contractor there who would go through and give like a estimate, you know, like a rough initial estimate of what they thought the rehab would be. All the time I was learning about it from other people and what the questions that they were asking that I hadn't come across before. So it ended up that one at that very first house, I was third on the list, so I wasn't the first person. And it was the same for the next two houses. I wasn't the first person either. And so I just think persistence. And I was all over Houston and places I'd never even been before. And I lived here for a while, so definitely opened up the city for me and exposed me to all sorts of things. And I got two houses that closed within a week of each other for the hard money loan, and almost came on the market for rental about the same time, too. In 2022.
That's brutal. I try to keep people from doing that. Did not do two at the same time, especially not at the beginning.
I also think two at the same time is a little much, but I was riding the high train, I think.
So were they both about the same kind of process, or was there anything interesting in either one of them that you'd like to cover?
One of the houses actually had a sewer breakage, line breakage under the house. And the house was amazing. I mean, it's four bedrooms, two baths, really spacious, good backyard, right by schools, right? but the sewer thing. So this is the one I went, we went back and we got some money off of the cell because I knew it would be a lot extra, you know, more than just fixing a sewer line in the backyard because they had to deal with going under the house. And so what we ended up doing is digging under and doing a new trench around the house instead of breaking the foundation, which is, I don't like to break the foundation. It just sounds bad, and I don't even know for sure, but it just sounds bad if you're breaking, like, the thing holding the house. So we did that, and it worked out well. The house rented, both houses rented fairly easy. One of them is actually south of Houston, about an hour in a town called West Columbia, and that was a little bit harder to rent because it's not on a road that is not where people are driving past it. Easily, it's at the end of a dead end, so that you can't see from the main road. So that I don't know if I would do that one again, but it's not a big section of land. So
there's a very good learning piece of information from what you just shared for everybody. I'm going to pick it up and run with it, and then we're going to take a break. And that is, people always used to tell me, Del, there's so many rent houses in this neighborhood. Why would I buy here? You know, there's so much competition. I go, let me explain it to you. Where does Burger King put their Burger King? Right next to McDonald's and Wendy's, because everybody in that neighborhood's a renter. They're all looking at your house every day they drive by. All right, we're going to take a short break. Be right back with Angela Cy Ake and the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Walmsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Learn to retire in 5 years or less through real estate investing. Learn how, learn now. Let Lifestyles Unlimited show you how. Get educated now. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Walmsley.
Welcome back to Del Walmsley Radio Show. With me here today on Tell Del Tuesday is Angela Cyag out of Houston, Texas, and she has five rental houses with one garage apartment and then two passive investment deals. So we've talked about the first three of her houses. We're now up to house number four. Angela, was there anything different about house four?
No, actually, house four was smooth. Everything just worked like it's supposed to work. Nothing dramatic on it.
So I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. That's not sanitary, but does that mean that pretty much you figured it out by house four, that all those things that were...
No, definitely not, because house five was the shakeup. So,
okay.
House four was maybe, you could just say, maybe the pause, or maybe gave me one like normal, I guess, like the plan. And then number five had a lot of other, nothing terrible, but new life lessons, I could say.
We'll cover it because I want to hear all that. That's all good educational stuff for people. My question is, if house four was so nice and easy and smooth, did that make you put your guard down at all?
Maybe I got a little confident, but I would say not, because right after we had some storms and there were a couple of repairs that were needed. So you're never, I think, I don't want to say it's, you're not watching it, right? But, and I heard other issues afterwards, like the people who moved in moved out suddenly in 5 months. So that was new for me. And also how to handle emotional support animals that somehow came with a certificate. That was new. But that's all with the people, not the house and my rehab.
Okay. So let's talk about number five then, since that was a learning curve.
Yeah. Number five, it's across the street from a small community hospital. And I thought, how great is that? Because if something happens, you could just roll yourself across the street, or your family could roll you across the street and get help. And it's a small hospital, so there's not a lot of sirens and a lot of other things that could be real distractions. And you're towards the back of the hospital. But that, I learned, can actually detract from the value of the house, which I did not realize. But it worked out okay because my house value between the hard money and the actual final value went up $13,000. So I was still okay with it.
Tell us how the hospital detracted from value. It made the tenants not want it as much? Or how did that? What did
no,
it affect?
The appraiser. And so when you get your house appraised for the loan, I said, oh, I thought it would have been higher when he was doing the hard money appraisal. And he said, well, it's because it's near a commercial venue, you know, commercial site. I said, it's not commercial, it's a hospital. And he said, that counts, and it can count against you. I think he liked what we did with the rehab enough because it ended up it was the same appraiser who came back. And so we already knew about the hospital. Nothing was a surprise. But either I think there were some houses that in that couple month time, 2 or 3 month time, had sold for higher that raised my own appraisal value. So the hospital, even though it's detracting, the house still went up in $13,000 in value. So I was still happy.
Very good. How hard was it to rent it being next to a commercial, quote unquote, property?
I think the thing that hurt me on the renting for this house was how to handle the apartment behind it. So when I bought the house, well, actually, when I went to look at the house the first time, it was only advertised as a house, right? And looking good, right? And as I was walking up to it with the wholesaler, I said, why is there another building here? And he's like, I don't know. And it ended up it was a apartment and a laundry room for both the apartment and the house to use. And actually, that apartment is what saves the cash flow for the house. Because there was enough rehab needed that the house alone wouldn't have probably been okay with the numbers. But with the income from the apartment, it makes up the difference.
So how much do you rent the house for and how much do you rent the apartment for? And what sizes are they?
That's hard numbers. Okay, so the house, if I remember correctly, is about 1,500 square feet. And I'm renting it about $1,600. Okay. The apartment is about 550 feet, and I made it from an efficiency to a one-bedroom. I did that transition, and I do it for just under $600. So that makes a big difference.
You made it into a one-bedroom from an efficiency by putting a wall somewhere, I take it?
Yes. We built out a bedroom, and I just felt that I think it's great if your renters stay longer, and I think having a bedroom allows you that privacy if you need it, and privacy from whom? It's a one-bedroom apartment from yourself, but sometimes you don't want to see your bed all the time, right?
Yeah.
Watching TV, you don't want to stare at your messy bed or your clothes or whatever, and so I just thought they would stay longer if they felt like they were cozy.
What about the laundry room? What use does that get?
Well, it stayed a laundry room, and I was torn. I actually got some advice from Dina Fisher on how to do this. Because do you split the meter? Because that costs extra. And the house is a single family land use. So you can't split the meter. You can't get a second address, that kind of stuff. So I actually put in laundry machines that I charge a little like rental of those back to the renters. And because even utilities, I have to pay those and then pass it on to the renters because I can't split the meters for them to do it directly. So that was all new learning for me.
So if you can't split the meters, you couldn't use rubs? Just split it by square footage or by number of people or both?
I did some calculations because there wasn't a way for me to find like what previous usage was for that specific house. So I did a lot of Googling about square footage usage of a house, how many bedrooms, how many bathrooms, that kind of stuff, and did some calculations, a little bit of guesstimation because, again, there's no history of usage for the house, and even that, how do they use it? Because, like, I know for myself, my air conditioner set at 78 because I'm cheap. Other people, I had someone house it for me not long ago, and they put it to 70 while they were here. And I thought, that's so expensive. But I think closer to 70 is where most people set their air conditioner. So I don't really know what an AC or electric bill would cost. And electric bills utility bills outside of the Houston area seem to be more expensive. I'll just say south of Houston where I have my houses. The electric is higher, the water is higher, and I think we get a little used to our Houston prices, and it's not that way in these other towns. It's quite expensive to have electric there and water. So.
All right. Well, we've got just 2 minutes left for this segment. I want to ask you one question before we go on to the multifamily purchases. The next deal you do, single family, is there anything you would have done differently on all these that you'll think about in the next house? Have you learned something that's going to make you do something different?
I am guilty of scope creep because this last house, well, this last house had some extra problems that we didn't know about, but it had beautiful wood floors, so we finished the wood floors, and I went with someone I thought they gave me a great price, a super great price, but they actually ended up not doing a good job, and it was very rough. The wood floors were rough. And when I talked to them about it, because, you know, people make mistakes, and I thought they would just fix it, but they actually said, oh, we also thought it was rough, but they kept going and stained it. And I thought, wouldn't you just get the sander out again if you also felt it was rough? So I ended up having to get someone else to come fix that. And if I just would have went with them first, it would have saved me time on being done with the project. So I'm just looking to really look at the numbers, be strict with my rehab, and stick with it.
Now I'd like to shift over, if I could, Angela, over to multifamily. Somehow, somewhere, you're doing all these wonderful single-family deals. You've decided to go do a couple passive deals. Can you share with us where that thought process came from?
I just felt that I wanted to grow in the real estate realm. Like you said earlier, I do like diversity, so I don't want to put everything into single-family houses. And I thought the idea of being a passive sounded really nice. So I went for it a couple years ago. At the end of 2023, went into two passive deals. And it's been going well, but it's a little bit slower. And I think the single family is so much action that maybe just waiting for that the dividends and stuff to come out seems hard.
It doesn't sound like your personality very much at all when you start getting those rent checks right away, huh?
Not just that, but I mean, I was a small investor. You might say I have this unicorn investor t-shirt on now just to inspire me for this conversation. But it's I'm a small investor. And so when you're small, you get small dividends. And so you can't make, I mean, you're going to earn stuff, right? And it is coming in and it's saving up and stuff like that. But if you invest small, you get small dividends. This is how it works. So I'm saving up to possibly do another deal, another house. I'm not sure what next.
Have you thought about doing duplex or a fourplex?
Oh, I would love a duplex or fourplex. So like I said, I'm saving up even just for a single family. I somehow have this vision that if I have a duplex, whoever's on the other side should be my best friend. Probably because it's a movie that way. I don't know, but I would like a duplex or a fourplex.
I think those would work out well for you. When you picked the multifamily deals, what was your thought? Were you looking for the type of deal, or were you looking for the lead investor? What did you put both. More value on in that decision?
Both, because I had worked for Enron at some point, so I do think whoever's leading the bus, driving that bus, does matter in the whole scheme of it, right? You want someone who you can trust to do the best that they can for you. And so that was definitely in my decision making. And then the other part was I was looking for more of a yield. Didn't have to pay immediately, but within the next 6 months of investing, because I wanted to earn more money to save for new things, right? And I understand the value of a value play where they're doing so much rehab that you're really going to wait a year and a half to really see money coming in. And then you get, it's a higher percentage, right? Because you put in that risk and for that wait. But I don't want to wait right now. I want to grow faster. And so that's why I was looking for a more, not immediate, but sooner dividend payout than later.
So what is the short-term current future going to look like for Angela? What do you think is your next deal?
That's the problem, Dow. I have like 10 things in my head and nothing, and no idea which one. Because I'm still reading single family postings like I have bazillions of dollars. I don't. I read a lot of the multifamily ones also. Also don't have that kind of money saved because, you know, I just have done all these other things. And then I think, what kind of side hustle can I do to get myself more money so I can do it? Like, even tonight, I, for fun, deal blackjack at, like, one of those casino parties companies, and they pay you. And I'm like, ooh, for the house, for the next house. Excellent. I just think, what can you do to save faster so you can get in? And then there's different levels of entry, right? So if you save enough for a single family or a multifamily, or do you save more so that you can finally get that fourplex, right? You got to save more. And then one thing that I will say that has sort of not worried me but ruined my plan this year was that the housing market has a lot of houses for sale. So the one house I wanted to sell this year didn't appraise. Then I wouldn't say didn't appraise because we didn't do an appraisal, but didn't sell quickly at the price I wanted, and even we lowered it for a little bit, and it didn't get a lot of bites. So I ended up renting it out again. So I didn't lose money on the thought of selling it, but my idea was to sell one, buy two, and I'm like, ooh, I'm having problems. So right. How am I going to use it for more money? That extra equity you're pulling out isn't going to pull out maybe. So now that I'm still ahead of where I was before I had that house, right? But and you own more of the house, right? So there's still additional equity capture that you really do have in the house. But that dream of selling it for $245, what it was appraised at, you might have to do $225. So that's $20,000 of your equity that you may not see if you have to sell it right now, right? So I just put it back into the rentals. And waiting for the housing market to turn around.
Yeah, but I think you need to hold on because the yin-yang of all this is that while interest rates are so high right now and Trump's trying to get the Fed to change that, but we'll see what happens. But while they're so high, the prices are so high, people aren't looking at buying homes. But on the yin-yang side of that, the other side of that is that investors are able to buy houses at really good prices. So, you know, it's one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situations in life. I like the fact you're doing all these little hustle things. I saw on your resume, you got all kinds of them that you do, stuff you like to do. That's interesting. So I really want to appreciate you taking some time out from your busy schedule to come on and share your story with us. And for the rest of you out there, remember this, it's not just the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.